everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you along with Mr. Tom Fairbanks. Tom, I got plenty of sugar. Pima County Supervisor Rex Scott was kind enough to bring in a full Danish Kringle from Mona's. And you have not had a chance to get out there to get a piece.
Not yet.
It's coming.
Now, for those of us who are not that familiar with the Kringle, thank you, Rex. We're talking something here that can serve more than one person by itself?
It can serve more than one person. It's
a good sized pastry.
It probably could serve 40 people. but depending on how we're doing here at the station and the size of the cut, I mean, yeah, it's...
All right, I can't wait.
All right, I'll let you get out there and grab a piece. I think I'll be okay here for the next couple of seconds while you grab a piece. Anyway, it is the Buckmaster Show. It's Thursday, September the 14th, 2023. We are in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio, the radio station 1030 KVOI, Tucson Source, for news and talk, and the source for lots of live local talk here in our community. We have our worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com, our live line for our telephone interviews presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Rex Scott is with us, Pima County Supervisor, Democrat representing the 1st Supervisorial District, which covers the foothills and the northwest area of the valley. Supervisor Scott, thank you first for bringing in a way to my heart, Mona's Danish Kringle. And I haven't had a piece yet, but I've offered it generously to the staff here at Bustos Media in Tucson. Everybody's enjoying it. I'll be grabbing a piece here maybe during the mid-break, but thanks for bringing it in.
Bill, it's absolutely my pleasure. And this is, as you know, my first appearance on your show since you lost your beloved Anne. And
yep.
I just want to tell you, as somebody who's relatively a rookie with regard to marriage, my wife and I celebrate our 30th anniversary at the end of May 2024. The love story that you and Anne wrote together over 51 years is really an inspiration to our entire community. And I know our entire community has taken you into their hearts, and we will continue to do so. And we thank you and Anne for everything that you've done for Tucson and Pima County over your time here.
Well, Anne was an amazing woman and very brave woman, and we'll be talking more about that as we have our funeral, or as commonly referred to as celebration of life, which I like that very much.
Yes.
Because we're going to celebrate Anne's life on Saturday morning, October 14th at St. Philip's in the Hills. Father Robert and the team up there have just put together the most incredible service. It's just going to be a beautiful service. And I do want to say to the community, thank you so much. And I've been very open about what has happened with Anne. And I did that for a couple of reasons. Number one, hug the person you're with. Do not take one day for granted with your loved one. That's at the top of the list. The second thing is just get your affairs in order. You know, when Anne had, we had about 10 weeks and we were hoping for more, but we would sit down and try to go over everything. Someone's been given a terminal, you know, she's going to die. So we had to try to get our affairs in order. And there were a lot of things we missed. I wish I could just say, Anne, where's the title to the car? Where's this? I mean, so get your affairs in order. And the third reason I did it, Rex, is it's been very, very helpful. People have given really great advice. They've been down the road, perhaps, that I am now journeying down. They've lost a husband, or they've lost a wife, and they've got great advice.
I think it's typical of you, Bill, that you found your therapy and self-care in reaching out to other people.
I have. And, you know, social media takes a lot of knocks, and there are bad things about social media, but one of the good things is what's happened when you do have a situation like this, and people have been so darn supportive. All right, let's talk about the top story right now about the Border Patrol and these street releases. There have been in Santa Cruz County, migrants have been released.
And Cochise County.
A newspaper in London, the Daily News, I believe, was showing a video purporting to show a busload of African migrants being released in Tucson, but I don't think that has been verified. But anyway, why is this happening now?
Well, Bill, we have been dealing with an influx of asylum seekers into Pima County for the last 5 years. The last 4 years. This began in April of 2019. And what we're seeing now is a significant increase in the daily number of asylum seekers who come into our community. And these folks are usually only with us for an average of 2 to 3 days before they go to be with their sponsors in places all over the country. And Pima County has made very prudent and very wise use of federal funds that are made available to border communities to deal with these temporary visitors to our community, not only to safeguard their health and their safety, but also to make sure that their presence in our community in such large numbers is not an issue for the general public health and safety. And what we were averaging last month was about 600 people a day at the Casas Alitas Welcome Center. We received close to 1,200 asylum seekers yesterday. And
1,200?
Right.
In one day.
1,183. The numbers that we've been seeing have mostly been families. Mm-hmm. Lately, although in recent days there's been an increase in single adult males and females, what we've been seeing over the course of the last several weeks has been a real increase in family numbers. And there have been over 40 countries that have been represented in these asylum seekers. So we are working very hard with our partners with Catholic Community Services to prevent street releases in Tucson and Pima County. Other border cities in the United States, San Diego, San Antonio, El Paso, have all experienced street releases over the last four-year period. Pima County and Tucson have not, because of the work that we've been doing with our partners with Catholic Community Services through the Casa Alitas Welcome Center and the other network of shelters that we have. But we don't have as many partners in Maricopa County and Phoenix as we have in the past. Where our partners in New Mexico are also being challenged. So we're certainly hopeful of avoiding street releases in Pima County, but we're probably at greater risk of that happening than we have been in the last 4 years.
The processing centers are just overloaded, so they have to go to this, what they would be considered a safety valve of the street release.
Well, under,
I mean, yeah.
Under current federal law, and this is why the failure to take on immigration law reform by our Congress, and it's a bipartisan failure. The current immigration law says that Customs and Border Patrol, once someone is determined to be a legal asylum seeker, they cannot keep them in custody. So they have to release them. And that's why you've seen street releases in two of our neighboring counties. That's why you've seen street releases over the course of the last 4 years in other border cities throughout the Southwest. And that's what we're trying to avoid in Pima County. But unless and until the United States Congress takes on immigration reform, Customs and Border Patrol is legally obliged to release these folks once they are determined to be legal asylum seekers. And there's just been a massive influx of asylum seekers from all over the world, but they are certainly making use of the southern border.
You wonder, well, what do these people do when they're released on the street?
Well, we haven't had that experience yet. We have not had that experience yet, and we hope that we hope that we don't. What we're able to do through the Casa Elitis Welcome Center and the network of other shelters that we have in place is ensure that these folks are fed and sheltered and given whatever medical care that they may need during the average 2 to 3 days that they're here. And then we get them to the airports or bus stations where they are off to connect with their sponsors all over the country.
All right. Let's see if we... Well, why don't we take a caller before we take the break so we don't have to hold Debbie on the line through the break. Debbie calling on 79024, which is our... 2040, which is our Buckmaster Show Live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Go ahead, Debbie. You're with Pima County Supervisor Rex Scott.
Hi there. My question is, when the term street release, is there any actual legal or technical difference between street release versus people going to one of these welcome centers? I mean, the status of the person, is it any different, or are you just trying to say in one case they have somewhere to spend the night and in the other they don't?
Debbie, you've summed things up perfectly. Yes, their status is determined by Customs and Border Patrol. They're the ones that make the determination of whether or not somebody is a legal asylum seeker. But we've been able to avoid street releases in Tucson and Pima County because of what we are doing at Casa Elitis Welcome Center and the other shelters that we make use of when Casa Elitis becomes overburdened.
All right, we'll take a break right here. Mona's Danish Bakery is our sponsor who have, Rex Scott brought in a Danish Kringle, I forgot to turn my cell phone off. So that's what you're hearing in the background. But anyway, Mona's Danish Bakery, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Check it out for their, of course, very famous Danish Kringles, which we talked about at the top of the show. Supervisor Scott brought in a Kringle, and we're very much appreciative. And check it out. Mona's open 6:30 in the morning. People are ready and waiting when Steve and the team open the door at Mona's. They do take Monday off, well-deserved. Be right back with Rex Scott.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006. And the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan as early as 2023 for public review. Learn more about the process at rtanext.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com. Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, Thursday edition. Tomorrow, our Friday focus interview, Mike Ortega returns to the program, the Tucson City Manager. But right now, it's Pima County Supervisor Rex Scott, Democrat, representing Supervisorial District Number 1. And Tom has called us on line 1 on our live line presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Tom, you're with Supervisor Scott.
Hey, good afternoon, gentlemen. And I apologize if you've already brought this subject up. I'm a little late to joining in, but I was wondering if there's any resolution to the lawsuit against the city on the county water rates.
I don't know. I haven't heard a thing about that. What do you think, Supervisor Scott?
Tom, thanks very much for your question. We get updates from the county administrator whenever she is updated on the lawsuit, and we haven't had an update in, at least a couple of months. I know that there were the last update we had is that the city was seeking to dismiss the lawsuit, and the judge rejected their request to do so. And we haven't had any updates since then. It's moving very slowly, as lawsuits often do. But we're determined not only to stand up on behalf of our constituents, but also to, as we do with sewer rates, make a strong argument that rates should really only reflect the cost of doing business.
Okay, thank you, Tom, for that question. It's actually a good one. I hadn't thought about that lawsuit. That kind of has been sort of pushed to the back burner, but it's still there. All right, Supervisor Scott, we had the mayor, Mayor Romero, was on the program Tuesday, talking about RTA next, and we'll have Councilwoman Nikki Lee coming up after the 12:30 break. Probably we'll ask Nikki to weigh in also on this RTA next. But when you heard the interview with the mayor, pretty positive, wasn't it?
I really appreciated Mayor Romero's comments, and I think that you would have heard similar comments from any of the other 8 members of the 9-member RTA board, because as she pointed out, we voted unanimously at our last meeting to not only set the date for an RTA next election to be in May of 2025, but we also gave direction to the Citizens Advisory Committee that's working on the draft of the RTA next plan that's eventually going to come to us for our review to not consider any source of revenue higher than the existing half cent. We might, as a board, consider doing more, but that's the purview of the board, and the CAC needs to be working within the parameters of the existing half cent sales tax. We also asked them to base their plan on the conservative revenue estimates that we got from the Eller College with the U of A, because we don't want to be in a position, as we were with the current RTA plan, where some kind of revenue shortfall causes us to monopolize all of the other federal funds that come into the area for transportation to meet our commitments to the RTA. We also asked them to make use of the new cost estimates that are that we're getting from our consultant for the cost of various projects. And we also told them to look at all of the other areas besides roadway elements when they're coming up with a draft plan for us. And again, that was a unanimous vote, and it was at least the third or fourth unanimous vote that we've had in the last 3 years of working together. And it speaks to the fact that all nine of us are determined to complete fully the current RTA plan that was passed by voters in 2006, and to get a new RTA next plan for the next 20-year period in front of voters by May of 2025.
So the chronology is now laid out.
It is. It is.
And listening sessions could begin in a matter of months.
Well, our...
Or is that a little too...
No, I it depends on how many months we're talking in that matter. But yeah. our direction to the CAC is that they get a draft to us by December. So we could certainly start to see listening sessions in the beginning months of 2024.
The whole package, as the mayor indicated, there has to be, and this makes sense, there has to be to appeal to voters in a very wide, a diverse, let's put it that way, a range of needs. There has to be something for everybody to put
in.
No,
she's spot on. Yeah. Our goal as a nine-member board is wherever you live in Pima County, whether it be in the city of Tucson or the unincorporated county, Marana, Sabarita, Oro Valley, South Tucson, the Pascua-Yaqui lands, the Tohono O'odham Nation lands, we want you to have a reason to vote for this next RTA next plan.
Meanwhile, Pima County has its own transportation calendar, and you are moving ahead with that, correct?
We absolutely are. We absolutely are. We've made a long-standing commitment to make use of both local and state funds to repair and maintain all of our roads in both the arterial and collector category, and also local roads, roads that you would see in your own neighborhood or subdivision.
Was the thinking to push it to May rather than November of 24 would have been too soon, in my opinion.
I don't think
and competing with the rest of the ballot.
Yeah, when you think about the size of a ballot in a presidential election year, the RTA next measure could really get lost in such a lengthy ballot. So the entire board was very strongly committed to doing this in the spring of 25.
Let's talk a little bit about what you've got coming up. You are going to be doing another round of town halls. What have you had? What are you and your staff planning?
Well, this is our third series of town halls. And what we do is we go into different areas of the district. And I first give an overview of what the county does, all the services and supports that the county provides. What is the role of the Board of Supervisors? What are our various sources of revenue? Both from local property taxes, but also from state shared revenues. And after giving that overview, kind of that primer on county government and the roles of the Board of Supervisors, then I open it up to questions and comments from our constituents. And it really is a classic town hall where whatever's on your mind or in your heart, you can talk about with your supervisor. And for me, when I'm out in the district talking at town halls or in front of homeowners associations or speaking at community groups or doing what I'm going to do tomorrow and talking with students in one of our local high schools, that to me is the best part of the job. And you can't wait for people to come to you. You have to go out and meet them where they are. And that's why we're proud to have this third series of town halls.
How does that feel for you getting back into a school environment because you spent so much of your adult life in the schools?
It's energizing for me, Bill. I mean, this is the fifth school year in a row that I haven't been opening a school. We started the school year in August last month, and this is the fifth school year in a row that I wasn't opening a school for the first time in 30 years. And it's still tough getting used to that. So I love getting into schools. And I'm especially going to enjoy tomorrow because the students at this school, it's Mountain View High School in the Marana District, they were seventh graders. at Tortolita Middle School when I retired as their principal back in 2019. Wow. And now they're seniors in high school. So it's going to be a genuine blessing to be able to be with those kids tomorrow.
And I know you feel very strongly about constituent services. Why don't you, in a few seconds here, if someone has a question and they live in District 1, call your office.
They should. I have three outstanding staff members who work with me with the alliterative name sequence of Cammy, Kate, and Kim. And you can reach us. You can reach us at 724-2738, or you can email us at district1, that's the numeral 1, at pima.gov.
All right. Pima County Supervisor Rex Scott. And again, thanks for bringing in a fine Mona's Danish Kringle, so we can all enjoy that. Thank you very much.
My pleasure, Bill.
All right, we'll take a break right here. It's Buckmaster, the midway point of our Thursday program. We'll meet with Tucson City Councilwoman Nikki Lee right after the break.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade, using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana. Plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Thinking about a river cruise? Let Bon Voyage Travel guide you to choose the perfect cruise to complement your vacation dreams. River cruising has become more popular than ever, and we know you have so many options to consider when selecting the destination, cruise line, and ship. At Bon Voyage Travel, we provide a comprehensive presentation on the top tips for river cruises and have a team of specialists to assist you. Visit bvtravel.com and view our River Cruise 101 presentation today.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. This is perfect weather to do some gardening. Green Things is ready. That knowledgeable staff, just go and say, I want to get some beautiful color in the garden for the autumn, and they will point you in the right direction. 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, and actually, I'm up now about 5 o'clock in the morning to take care of my cat and start watering. And checking the thermometer this morning, it was actually like about 4 degrees cooler than it had been all summer. So anyway, it is a perfect time for the garden. GreenThingsAZ.com is their website. Their sister business is Zocalo Village. all that great Talavera pottery, beautiful items, dining room sets out of mesquite, beautiful handcrafted things. Our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Nikki Lee joins us, Ward 4, Tucson City Councilwoman, Democrat, running for a second four-year term. Nikki is Senior Account Executive at Arbinger Institute, where she also is an executive and leadership coach. Hey, Nikki, how are you?
I am doing okay. How are you, Bill?
Hanging in there.
Yeah.
Taking, as I tell people, this is where right now is my safe zone, comfort zone behind the microphone. The only thing in my life that feels normal. So I get behind the microphone from noon to one. I'm doing good.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about Supervisor Scott was just talking about the RTA Next program, and we had the mayor on Tuesday. This is a program, Councilwoman, that in order to pass, it really has to appeal to a wide diversity of people who want, they have different needs that they want. Some want more public transit. Some want the roads fixed. It's got to be the right mix.
Absolutely. This is one of those challenges we've been talking about over and over again, is how do we put something in front of the voters that is going to appeal to them, help them want to get behind it because they see value in whatever it is that we do. And we, you know, I know I recognize the need for this regional approach, really appreciate the partnerships. And at the same time, we have to make sure that Tucson is positioned to get a fair share of the projects, because we are the biggest group of folks here that would be contributing to the overall effort.
What do your constituents want when you talk with them about transportation?
Yeah. So I know some of my colleagues, they, you know, different parts of town have different needs. And for us, you know, we are on some areas of Ward 4, the edge of town, and we've got some real capacity challenges with mm-hmm. the traffic.
Sure.
And so for us, you know, the whole, if you build it, they will come. Well, it's already built and we're already
yeah.
here, but
yeah.
we don't have the capacity to move cars around. To the extent that we do. And I know in other areas of town, it's more transit related and bus related and pedestrian related. And there are definitely elements of that that are needed in Ward 4. But we're kind of a unique ward because we have some very densely populated areas, more like, you know, urban and some suburban sides, and then some rural sides. So we have a variety of needs in Ward 4.
The tech park, right, is in your ward?
Yes, our ward yeah. sits around it. It's technically not City of Tucson land,
right.
but it's an island inside of Ward 4.
Mm-hmm. But that is an area that continues to grow.
It does.
Right?
It does.
Yeah. So when you look at the RTA Next program as it is right now, I know the City of Tucson has its own program, and I think today is kind of one of the official kickoffs to getting every street in the City of Tucson will get attention. So how does that fit with RTA Next, in your opinion?
Yeah, so there's definitely different layers when we're mm-hmm. looking at roads. So what we did with Proposition 411, thankfully, you know, the voters, I think it was over 70% of voters voted for this. This allows the City of Tucson to surface, do maintenance, basically touch every residential street in the city over the next 10 years, which is amazing mm-hmm. and very, very much needed. Then we have, you know, the bigger capacity conversations and big infrastructure stuff like what we would have with RTA. So we have a lot of different needs, and we're trying to do what we can with the resources and the scope that we have to address this, because everybody wants good roads to drive on, and that's what we need to try to deliver on.
Let's go to the live line. Matt has called us. He has a question for Councilwoman Nikki Lee. Go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, hey, Nikki. I think the council's meeting again on the 19th next. Actually, what you're discussing is sort of a good segue, RTA Next, you know, especially on some of these transportation issues. My question is the buses. I think it's going to come up possibly as an issue during the next council meeting. How do we transition to buses that people feel safe on, and transitors actually pay the cost of. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Matt,
how
that's,
do you?
That's
good question.
Very good question, Matt. And thanks for jumping in and calling. Definitely a lot of aspects to consider when we're looking at the buses as well. I know that there's a conversation ongoing about routes and how we can better make those routes efficient and looking at those possible opportunities for improvement there. Safety is also something that I have heard a lot of, especially as of recently, talking to Teamsters Union, bus drivers, or not, yeah, the operators of the buses, and some of the concerns that they're having. And those are very, very real, very valid concerns for not just the safety of the bus operator themselves, but for the folks riding on the bus. So there's definitely a lot of analysis that we need to do. There's a lot of data that we need to collect. So for example, we're not documenting incidences on the bus unless it reaches the level of an assault. And so there are a lot of things that happen that are lower than that level of an assault that we just don't necessarily capture. And we're not able to pull that into the conversation to look at how we can make efficiencies, how we can make things more safe for all of the users of the transit system. And that's work that needs to be done. And so I've had active conversations with our union folks, as well as with the folks in charge of safety of the bus system, to really start to identify some actionable steps that we can take to work to make sure that people feel safe and that things are running efficiently, and that it's a high value service that we're able to provide to the community. So I hope that that kind of touches on your question, Matt.
How do we monitor what's going on our transits? Do they all have closed circuit or no?
There are cameras.
Okay.
There are cameras. There's dispatch service for the operator so they can call in if there are concerns around safety or mechanical or otherwise. Mm-hmm. So those are in place, and we have an amazing person who was a retired TPD officer who supported work with the Department of Homeland Security, who is in charge of the operations around safety on the transit system. And there are definitely some opportunities to look at how we can make things even more secure, knowing, you know, who's on buses. If there are instances, sorry,
yes.
It feels like Friday, but it's only Thursday. but definitely lots of things we need to evaluate and look at implementing in the system, just so people do have a sense of safety as well as efficiency and just a good service.
It makes sense to try to document any kind of incident, but right now the mechanism really isn't in place. But you say you're talking to the union people about that.
Yeah, just
like who would be responsible for documenting it, and it would give the council a much better idea of what we're working with and how really is there a safety problem here.
That's right,
yeah.
Because we do know that the number of assaults went down after COVID, after the mask mandate, because that caused some issues for our bus operators by having to basically enforce a mask mandate. And after the mandate was dropped, assaults went down as well. But there is a piece that's missing, that stuff that isn't quite an assault level, but it is an issue on the bus or at a bus stop that we don't have enough visibility on to really understand how we can solve for that.
All right, we will take a break right here. We'll have more with Tucson City Councilwoman Nikki Lee, a native of Warsaw, Illinois, from my home state of the land of Lincoln. We'll be back with Councilwoman Lee after this.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA tax is collected throughout Pima County and averages about $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation projects in the region. The RTA tax funds priority projects that were approved by voters in 2006. See details in the latest RTA annual report at rtamobility.com.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com. For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Wow, what a beautiful day over in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, mid-70s. That's perfect. Great time of year to take a getaway over to Silver City. Only about a three-hour drive. The Land of Enchantment is especially enchanting in the month of September and October, the months of autumn is a great time over there. Check it out. So much to do, including hiking in the very greened up Gila National Wilderness after our recent rain. So it's a perfect time of year. Their website, southwestnewmexico.org. We continue now with our Councilwoman discussion, Ward 4 Democrat Nikki Lee. You know, you come from a small town of Warsaw, Illinois. There wasn't a lot to do after you graduated from Warsaw High School. I mean, you joined the service, but for a lot of the kids, what are they going to do? They're going to head to St. Louis. They're going to go to Chicago. Here in Tucson, there are a lot of kids that think Tucson's just kind of too small and there's no jobs for them.
Yeah, no, I did come from a very small town. I think the current population is around 1,500 or 1,600 people. And the neighborhood that I live in Tucson has more people than my entire hometown. And there was not a lot of opportunity there, honestly. There were a few manufacturing places that were kind of in and out, but nothing really significant. There is a gas station in my hometown. So if I would have stayed, I would probably be making pizza at Casey's, which is very good pizza.
Yeah.
But, you know, I did decide to join the military for a lot of reasons and really, really grateful that I had the ability to do that. Here locally, it's interesting because my son is 17 mm-hmm. and he's a senior in high school and he's looking at college. And I think he's one of the folks that feel that way. Like, this is just a small town. To me, it's big.
Yeah.
But there are tons of opportunities here. It was one thing I love about our economy is the diversity of our economy. Mm-hmm. There's really something for everyone here, whether it's high tech, manufacturing.
And currently everybody is hiring.
Yes.
I mean, it's everybody's got the four we need people sign out front.
That's right. Especially with how much, you know, tourism drives our economy mm-hmm. here locally. And we're coming into the season, whereas you were just talking about Silver City, you know, and I opened up my front door this morning and got a little cool air in before it heated up. You know, folks are going to be coming to visit us here pretty mm-hmm. soon and mm-hmm. spending their money here, which is great. So lots of opportunity. And I would love to see kids stay here and plant roots for the long haul.
You know, we talked at length with Mayor Romero on Tuesday about it was really the 3-year anniversary this month of her declaration. It was one of the first things she did about a climate emergency. And when you look at what's gone on in the past 3 years, not just in Tucson, but weather around the country, I mean, the news has put climate has moved from the back burner nationally to the front burner. And we in Tucson are on the front lines of climate change. So what are we going to do about it?
Yeah, very, very timely, Bill, because I was looking this morning just to think about some things coming into the show today, and I was reminded of China this year, right? Mm-hmm. The amount of rain that they've had during typhoon season. Mm-hmm. One city's rainfall exceeded 60% of their annual rainfall in 83 hours. Mm. And then I know we're all seeing what's happening in Libya right now.
Yeah.
With those heavy rainfalls. And as of this morning,
it was like a tidal wave that hit that one area.
It was. And the dams broke. And they said this morning, at least 8,000 people have perished, with 10,000 more unaccounted for right now. It's just, it's devastating. And you see these extreme weather events all over the world. Mm-hmm. Locally, a lot of us pay attention to monsoon season.
We had in our place up in the central foothills two extreme weather events, two 1-in-100-year events in about 10 days. In our neighborhood, we had roofs blown off. It was a very destructive monsoon season. Not that much rain, but the wind and hail was terrible.
That's right. That's right. And I saw those same things on the news as well. Someone's roof was in their pool.
Yes.
And people who've been here for a really long time were interviewed saying, I've never seen this extreme weather. So, you know, for us, Mayor and Council 2020 declared a climate emergency, and we kicked off the process of creating a plan on how we're going to position ourselves, how we're going to adapt. And some of the key areas, you know, where we talked about extreme heat. I know Governor Hobbs had gotten some efforts started with extreme heat, because we're seeing that. It was just 111 last week.
So one of the hottest days ever recorded in September in Tucson. 111? That's unheard of.
111. And so in March of this year, you know, after going on the journey of creating the plan, in March of this year, Mayor and Council adopted our Tucson Resilient Together plan. And, you know, plans can be absolutely useless if they're not implemented, right? And so we have a plan. We recently hired our first Chief Resiliency Officer, and she is going to be responsible for helping to make sure that all the things that we're talking about doing, we're actually able to deliver. The important part is, you know, we heard back from the community that some folks felt like we weren't doing enough. Some folks felt like we shouldn't be focused on this at all. And so for us, what we're trying to do is find that sweet spot where the things that we can change in our own internal operations that are no cost or low cost, we're doing it. We're doing everything we can with the resources that we have to move the needle. And one area that I like to focus on in particular is how we position ourselves to respond to things like this, right? So we can do everything we can to help us not hit the 1.5 degrees Celsius. There's only so much of that we can control, and we're focused on that. But how do we respond? You know, back in February, on Valentine's Day, we had a nitric acid spill on I-10.
Oh, yeah.
If you remember that.
Yeah, I do remember that.
It was quite a challenging time for us for those 48 hours or so, where a lot of folks in Ward 4 were impacted. And just through that experience, it kind of exposed some gaps that I think need to be taken care of around how we support the community. Although it was on I-10 and the jurisdiction was the Department of Public Safety, it impacted
your ward.
It impacted my ward,
my residents. Because that was like a toxic kind of a cloud.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so the Pima County Health Department was involved. Several state agencies, poison control was involved. Fire, obviously, for hazardous material was involved. Our police officers work with sheriff's office because all the traffic from I-10 was diverted. So all that to say, having lived through that experience with our residents, we can also do better as we look at our own way of responding and supporting the coordinated efforts, instead of just saying, well, it's their person's, that responsibility versus that responsibility. How are we going to help just take care of the people who are impacted?
Yeah, we need to be very proactive in that area, because look at the crossroads, Tucson, Arizona, with all our rail traffic that comes through here. We really need to beef up our readiness when it comes to emergencies.
We do. We do. And I've talked a lot with the city manager about that as well, just to make sure, you know, we have plans. We've thought about this. This is part of the military part of me, right? You got to exercise. You got to be ready.
Right.
So you're not caught flat-footed. And so making sure we have the plans, that we're exercising the plans, that we're working with our partners, and that we're prepared. Because when you see these things happening all over the planet, you're just wondering when, not to be a doomsday person, but when is something like this going to happen to us from flooding or whatever, and how are we going to respond?
I'm with you on that about planning. I'm a big planner. We do need to talk about the unsheltered population. Are we getting people into these former hotels and motels that now can be used as temporary housing for people.
Yes. Yes.
Is that happening?
This is such a big conversation,
yes.
As you know. We have, through different means, especially working with the state, the state's been a great partner, the Department of Housing, been able to get funding to get these projects off the ground, purchasing Nights Inn, for an example, which is going to provide units. We're specifically looking at families and seniors because we're seeing way too many seniors that are getting priced out of their homes and their apartments. It's absolutely terrible. So how can we try to quickly place people? And it feels like, you know, I texted the city manager to see if I could get an update number before coming on here. But in the past 18 months or so, we've been able to take over 700 folks from the street into permanent housing. So not shelters, not anything like that, but into an actual
every one
place.
Of those is a success story. If you can get somebody into permanent housing, there is just, it just breaks your heart. Think about a senior maybe living alone or a couple that suddenly they're living in their car.
Yeah.
It's tragic.
It is. I was driving past the mall the other day and I saw a family standing on the corner under one of the awnings, and you could just tell that they didn't have a place to go. And it's heartbreaking. And so, you know, we were able to place 700, but like you said, Bill, the demand far exceeds our capacity in terms of available units. So we've been working really hard to build additional units. We have, I think, another 600 or more that are scheduled to be online here in the coming months or year. Mm-hmm. It's not enough and it's not fast enough, but we're doing, you know, as much as we can. And like you said, every person we're able to help is a life. And how do we get more people not just placed in housing, but supported on their journey to employment or whatever their goals are. But the finish line continues to move, and it's really hard to keep up with that. And just continuing to tell the story about the work that the team is doing in partnership with the county and the state and the federal government is really important.
So the plan is try to beef up inventory, try to find inventory wherever you can. And I know that the team has been looking at what is available still. Are there some vacant properties that could be turned into homeless for the unsheltered?
Mm-hmm. We're looking at all those options and how can we be creative in creating more units to bring online. And, you know, with the weather going to be turning pretty soon, I think we could expect to see more people who are leaving colder climates to come here for the winter. So it feels very daunting. But like you said, every time we look at the person in front of us, and we're able to get them placed. That is, like you said, Bill, that is a success story. And I don't know that we'll ever catch up 100%, you know, but we're definitely putting everything we have toward this.
We have to try. All right, Councilwoman Nikki Lee, thank you, Councilwoman. Good to see you.
You too, Bill. Thank you.
All right, we'll take a break right here, a break for 23 hours, right? A break, and I'll be back in 23 hours. We've got Dave Ramsey. His very popular show on money is coming up after CBS Network News. Mike Ortega, city manager, will be our Friday Focus interview tomorrow. Until then, hope everybody has a great afternoon.